Well, thank you for the introduction, and I hope everything is going all right because my notebook has been causing problems today. So I hope that it will be fine now. So I'm going to come back to the kind of topics that Glenn Fredrickson talked about earlier today, and it's about using molecular field to link between scale. And the outline of my talk is that I will first give an introduction to molecular fields, and most of it will be repeating stuff that Glenn said already, so I guess I can be brief here. Then I will give some examples for molecular field simulations, and then at the end I will present an adaptive hybrid scheme that we're currently developing that links between particle-based and field-based simulations. So to start, a brief introduction. So if you look at polymer models, there is a certain hierarchy that you can find there, going from the ab initio level to the macroscopic continuum levels. And in this hierarchy, there are two types of mesoscopic models, some that are particle-based, either with particle-particle interactions or with density-based interactions, and some that are field-based with molecular fields or with Ginzburg-Landau models. So you can see here a distinction between a particle world and a continuum world, and that's a barrier that hasn't been crossed very often in multi-scale simulation methods. And I will here talk in particular about these two types of models, particle-based models with density-based interactions, and molecular field models, because there is a very tight connection between them, and I think they can constitute a link for going from the particle world to the continuum world. So let's start with the particle-based models with density-based interactions. So I call them Edwards models. Glenn had a sort of more specific definition of Edwards model, but I will call all of these models Edwards models. There are two elements they have in these types of models. You have a model for the bonded interactions. For example, the most common ones in theoretical treatments is the Gaussian chain, where you coarse grain from a real chain to a chain that is made of springs. And then you need a density-based model for the non-bonded interactions. And so, for example, the non-bonded interactions, I'm giving some types of possible density-based potentials here. This is just for simplicity. These are just one-component models. So if you have weak interactions, you can do a virial expansion in the local density, and going up to second order or third order term. You can generalize this to strong interactions by assuming a general free energy density, local density functional, and a popular ansatz is to just assume incompressibility. So one example is the Edwards model for AB blends that has, I think, been mentioned already, which is the most popular model in theories of copolymer blends. So the one element is continuous Gaussian chains, which is a chain of springs. Then we have two types of monomers, A of B and B, and you can determine local monomer densities for each of them, and you have incompressibility, and you have Flory-Huggins interactions, basically. So the non-bonded interactions are basically determined by one single Flory-Huggins parameter chi. So this is now the interpretation of this Edwards model is, well, you can look at it as a model that is defined on a lattice, and on each lattice point you determine the local densities, and then of course ideally as a theorist you'd like to take the continuum limit. Now the question is, what is the continuum limit? So you can take a pragmatic point of view. You can say the continuum limit is unphysical, and a discrete coarse-graining length should be really part of the model. Or if you're not that pragmatic, you tackle the continuum limit, you do the full field theory, you deal with the ultraviolet divergences, and Glenn Fredrickson has talked about that. And also David Morse has done some really nice work on how this renormalizes the chi parameter and other model parameters. So other issues, very briefly, of course, in this model, topological interactions are missing. That means that chains can't cross each other because the interactions are soft. This affects the dynamical properties and also the statics in two dimensions. But fortunately, it also affects the statics for ring polymers, of course, but fortunately, it doesn't affect the statics of linear chains in three dimensions. And then another issue is about this Flory-Huggins-Kahl parameter, which can sometimes be determined experimentally, but you find that they depend on temperature and composition and even on chain length. Sometimes the Kahl parameter goes like 1 over the chain length for some materials. So really, many of the times you don't really have transferability here, and the general exhaustive theory is still lacking, such that the very concept of the Kahl parameter has also been questioned. And for example, Tambasco, Lipson, and Higgins have come up with a suggestion for another more transferable parameter that should be used for characterizing polymers. But here we will stick with the Kahl parameter anyway. Okay. So after that, what can you do to study the Edwards models numerically? The most straightforward way is, of course, to put them on a lattice and to just simulate them. I mean, as a chain model with density-dependent interactions. To do this, you need to have a discretized formulation, and you should better not use an incompressible version because this is going to make your simulation really tough. And this has been done the first time by Larachi, Gu, and Zuckerman in 94. And Bezold first did it for binary systems. And Markus Müller picked it up in 2005. And ever since, it has been used by a number of groups. And it's really a very efficient method to study mesoscale polymer systems. So now next step is to go from particles to fields, and there I will recapitulate some basics on the self-consistent field theory that has been introduced by Glenn already. So the starting point is this partition function of the Edwards model, and for simplicity I will take a canonical system with only one component. So it contains a path integral over all possible chain conformations. Then the bonded interactions here will be those for Gaussian chains, and the non-bonded interactions are, well, and then we have some unspecified non-bonded interactions, which could be some general local free energy functional. Okay, so now the first approach to go to fields, I will talk compare two approaches which lead to the same result but give sort of different insights onto the heart of this theory. The first approach is the density functional theory, and the basis is due to the Kohn-Berg-Kohn theorem that the free energy of an inhomogeneous polymer system can be described by a functional that only depends on the local densities. And then the task is to guess this, non-trivial task is to guess this functional. And the ansatz now that leads to the self-consistent field theory is that you separate this free energy functional into a reference free energy functional of, and this is the reference system of of ideal non-interacting chains with the given density that you have, and then you add the non-bonded interactions in a perturbative way, just adding the interaction energy to the free energy functional. And so for the reference system, you can calculate that exactly. What you need to do is you need to construct an auxiliary system where these densities are just enforced by applying external, locally varying external fields. Then you can calculate the free energy of that. That basically gives you, you need to calculate the free energy of single polymers in these external fields. And Glenn Fredrickson has shown you how to do this with these Q function propagators. And then you can calculate the density and you can invert that. And then you do a Legendre transform and that gives you the density functional of the reference system. And then you add the interactions. And that gives you the full free energy functional. That gives you a free energy functional of the density. Now, in the self-consistent field theory, the next step is to minimize this functional with respect to the density, and that gives the self-consistent field equations. Now, I will also talk about the second approach, which is the one that Glenn has introduced, which is polymer field theory. So when you start from the partition function, now in our case, we want to stick with having arbitrary non-bonded interactions, not necessarily quadratic in the density. So we don't do a Havertz-Stratonovich, but we do a Fadeev-Popov transformation, which consists in inserting a delta function in a convenient way. And that gives us a fluctuating field theory where you can reformulate the partition functions in terms of fluctuating real density fields and fluctuating auxiliary complex, well, auxiliary fields. The free energy, the exponent of this in this fluctuating field theory, as you will recognize, it's the same exponent that we already found in the density functional theory. Now, in this case, the self-consistent field approximation consists in taking the saddle point integral with respect to both these auxiliary fields and the density, and that gives the same self-consistent field equations than the density functional approach and also the same free energy. So we can compare these two approaches to the self-consistent field theory. The density functional approach is a good starting point if you want to have a more detailed microscopic structure. For example, in the density functional approach, you can use density functionals that also incorporate packing effects to some extent. And also, it's an established starting point if you want to study dynamics of the system. And the field theoretic approach is, of course, the best starting point if you would like to look at long-range fluctuation effects. And otherwise, these two approaches result in an equivalent, I should say, mean field theory. So now this is a summary of what I mean if I'm talking about molecular fields. If I talk about molecular fields, I talk basically about a density functional of this type, where I have a contribution that depends on the partition function Q of a single chain in an external field. And the degrees of freedom in this theory are the density fields, but the important point is that the free energy functional still contains information on the molecular structure. For example, on the connectivity or the architecture of the molecules. So it's not local fields, these fields also tell you something about the molecule that you're studying. And the other important thing is that there is almost a quantitative connection to an almost equivalent particle-based Edwards model. And this is what I will use in the last part to design this hybrid scheme between particles and fields. But before I'm coming to this last part, because I will try to convince you that molecular field simulations are something nice by just showing you some examples. that's really nice, thank you. Yeah. So the first example, these are the two Chinese students, postdocs that did the work that I'm talking about now, Qi Hao and Yang Shen Chang. And so the first example is a problem where Qi Hao was interested in the formation of copolymeric vesicles. So here are some examples of copolymeric vesicles that form spontaneously in solution. And if you look at them, you have a coexistence of small and large vesicles, or also of connected vesicles and worm-like chains. So this looks as if the structures are not really truly at equilibrium. But they are still technologically interesting, of course, because you can use them as containers, maybe to put stuff in and transportation. And to understand how they form, the kinetics of vesicle self-assembly is important. So this is the problem that Qi Hao was interested in. And now in the literature at the time, you found that for the kinetics of vesicle formation, there's basically one conventional pathway, which is observed in simulations of short chain surfactants. It starts with micelle self-assembly, then these micelles aggregate to sheet, then they bend around, and eventually they close to vesicles. Now, in our system, first of all, we are interested in copolymers, not in small chain surfactants, where the time scales are much slower, and also the interactions are weaker but more extended. So this is done with a field-based model. The molecules are modeled as flexible Gaussian chains with blocks A and B and the solvent as single point-like particles. And in the interaction potentials, we have three chi parameters and their compressibility term. So, and now at this point, we need a dynamic model for the system, and we use a dynamic density functional that has been proposed, that's based on a functional proposed by Freie in 93. The general ansatz is a diffusive dynamics, where the evolution of the density field is related to the, let's say, local excess, the gradient of the local excess potential, which is the derivative of the free energy with respect to the density. And then in between, you have an Onsager coefficient, which characterizes the dynamics. And for example, if you want to implement Rouse dynamics, there is a nice way, which as found by Mauritz and Freie in a very nice paper, I think, from 1997, that you can, to a very good approximation, this Onsager coefficient then should be the single chain correlation, the intra-chain correlation function between R and R prime. And to a very good approximation, you can then rewrite the dynamic equations as a very simple equation, which has no non-local contribution at all anymore. You can also add noise up here, but this is we did that, but it's not really important for our context, so I'll omit the noise here in the following. And so now with this type of simulation, this is a kind of result that Chihao got. This is done at a relatively high copolymer volume fraction, and the very initial configuration is totally homogeneous, but after a very short time, you already have inhomogeneous popping up. And then if you wait for a while, then they will join. And and then these sheets form, and eventually it will close up. So this is at these high copolymer volume fractions, the conventional pathway is recovered. But if you go to lower copolymer volume fractions, something different happens. So again, the initial configuration was homogeneous, but after a short time, you have one single droplet. And then if you wait, the single droplet, it grows until it finally is also a vesicle. So this is a new way of forming a vesicle. And it's hard to see from these plots what exactly is happening here. But what happens is that starting from the droplet nucleation after a short time, the more and more copolymers are attracted from solution. So the droplet grows. So it's a nucleation and growth kind of pathway. Then the copolymers start to rearrange. They form micelle. Then the micelles grow until you cannot adapt the micelle structure anymore, so some of the copolymers flip, and you have a B part inside, and then eventually solvent can diffuses through the vesicle, because these copolymer polymeric structures are relatively loose with weak interactions. You still have a certain amount of solvent in there, and the solvent so can pass through and fill the vesicle up. So this is so the next thing is to vary the parameter systematically. Obviously, the copolymer concentration is important for this, and also the hydrophilicity of the B blocks, which sort of gives the internal interfacial tension between the copolymers and the outside, will be important. So if you do that, then depending on the parameters, you get the number of structures, for example, either rods. So this is how rods form, or you can get rings, or you can even get cage structures like this. And then Chihao constructed some kind of phase diagram where this is plotted, the copolymer volume structure against this chi parameter of B versus solvent. And so the final structures, you get the vesicles up here, or you get at high copolymer concentrations, you get different types of micelles, rod-like micelles or spherical micelles. Here you can get these rings, or even more complex structures, or something. In one case, or in some cases even a cage structure like this one. And if you look at the pathways that are the dynamic pathways to reach this, then you find down here there is a spinodal where from which on these micelles form spontaneously without really having to cross a kinetic barrier. Then up here, this line separates the coalescence pathway, the standard pathway, from the growth pathway. And if you look at where the structures is, then these new interesting cage structures, they form in this region where you have the growth pathway. So this was Shihao's work. Now the next step was to introduce hydrodynamics in this. And this is the work that Liang Shun did very recently. And basically what we did so far is we have devised the method and published it, but we haven't really looked at the problem yet. So I can only show first results on this. So our ansatz for introducing hydrodynamics in this problem is we take our original diffusion equation, we couple the convective flow to it, and this flow follows the Navier-Stokes equations. So the coupling between the two models is here, the convective flow, and here a thermodynamic force that is applied on the fluid due to the force that drives the demixing here. And so the simulation method that we devised for this is for the convection diffusion equation, we use a finite difference scheme as before. And for the Navier-Stokes equations, we use a lattice-Boltzmann model with force coupling, following methods described, for example, by Dünweg et al. And I don't want to go into the details here, because in 2 minutes, Kurt is going to stand up. And
5 minutes.
Yeah, OK. All right, so, and I still want to tell you about our hybrid method. So so basically, I'm going to show now the results that we get. And this is, I should say that the chain dynamics in this example are not realistic. We're not using this external potential scheme, but a local scheme. That's why you will observe many vesicle fusions, which do not happen if you take a more realistic dynamics. So this is, on the side of the chain dynamics, this is an unrealistic model, but you can see what happens if you introduce hydrodynamics in this in whatever dynamical model. And so now it should start to work. They work in parallel with hydrodynamics and without. And you see with hydrodynamics, it is much faster. And basically, that's the main difference. We looked at other things too, like at block copolymer sheets and so on. What we found is that the hydrodynamics, with hydrodynamics, you avoid strapped states. You have fewer defects in the end, at least in some cases. In other cases, you don't. But basically, otherwise, the hydrodynamics don't change too much to the pathways. And the main thing is that they really speed things up. And with that, I'm finished. I'm coming to the part three, which is ongoing work where we're trying to develop an adaptive multi-scale scheme that would link the particle and the field model. And the motivation is, as I said before, that these models are really almost equivalent, and that's why it should work there. Yeah. So for that, so the vision is we have this particle-based Edwards model, and we have a molecular field model. And the vision is to have a model that adaptively switches between these representations, such that ideally in interesting regions we would have particles, and in not so interesting regions we would have fields. So that's a vision. And so the idea is, for that we need space-dependent identity switches. So the starting point is this partition functions that I wrote up earlier, where here you have the Gaussian chains and here you have the interactions. And then what we do is we define a local chemical potential that acts, say, on the first bead of the chain. And if we have, and with this local chemical potential, we can construct an exact identity. And so this is the identity. The identity is you take a chain alpha, and you define a parameter tau, which is either 0 or 1. And then e to the minus delta mu of r alpha times tau minus effective potential nu will be 1 if nu is constructed in the correct way. So you can check this is correct. This is 1 here. So you put that in this partition function. And what this effectively does is it adds an additional degree of freedom on each chain. And for example, tau for chains with tau equals 0, we will have a chain of type F. And for chains with tau equal 1, we will have a chain of type P. And this is a semi-grand canonical ensemble. So the chains can switch between F and P. And they will switch according to a chemical potential that can be locally varying, but that's not a problem because this is an exact identity, right? And then the last step is to transform the polymers of chain F to molecular fields by this Pajeev-Popov kind of thing, and then leave the polymers of type P as they were. And so and that will give us a mixed semi-grand canonical scheme for simulating particles and fields at the same time. So the simulation methods for doing this, the particle chains are simulated by simple Monte Carlo monomer moves. The field chains, there we have two implementations. One is external potential dynamics, and the second is to have the densities fluctuate a bit by Monte Carlo moves. This doesn't, here we avoid the sign problem because we only let the fields fluctuate that are real, and the ones that are complex, they don't fluctuate. Actually, this thing here, is the results were the same, and this is so much faster that this is the recommended version. And then we have identity switches to switch between particles and fields, and here we need some scheme to put polymers in a way that is compatible with detailed balance, and then we use configuration bias Monte Carlo, in other words, Rosenbluth sampling. And I can show you as a first test, we looked at homopolymers in thin films. So the chemical, so the thin film is, the surface of the film is here and here, and the film has a thickness 16 RG. And the chemical potential is devised such that the polymers want to be particles close to the surface, and they want to be fields inside of the surface. So this is a simulation done with 10,000 chains in total, and every chain had 20 monomers. And the resulting density profile that you see here is that really we have mostly fields in the center of the film and mostly particles in the middle of the film. I should also say that these chains are in a good solvent, but because it's a very dense system, they reach a flat minimum in the center, a flat density in the center. So. And this is a snapshot now of the system. Now we will wonder that it's sort of much broader here than here. The reason is, I guess, because the chains are when they move outside of the simulation box, the coordinates they are allowed to move outside of the coordination box, and just for calculating the interactions, the coordinates are folded back. And what you can see here is that. In the middle, you have very few chains, and they also are not there for a very long time. That's why they haven't moved very far, whereas here these chains have moved very far. That's why this is kind of spread out. And now what we want to do, of course, is we would like to compare this with a pure model, and our reference system is the pure particle model, because that's the result that we should get. And so what's shown here is the three density profiles for the pure field model, the hybrid model, and the pure particle model. So you will see that the hybrid model is almost on the pure particle model, and the pure field model goes to zero at the surface, which is something that implementations of field models will do, and which is not really because it's very hard to construct them in a way that they account correctly for finite chain length effects. And the reason why we have a finite density here is because the chain lengths had only chain length 20. So what you can see is that the hybrid model here improves on the pure field model. Actually, I'm done. These are my conclusions. Molecular field models are, I hope I've shown you that molecular field models are at the interface between particle-based and field-based models because they still do incorporate some information on molecular details, on molecular structure. Then I hope I have convinced you that molecular field simulations can give insight into phenomena on mesoscopic time scales. You may have noticed that the simulations I showed you, they cover the time range in the millisecond regime, or actually several milliseconds. So that's hard to reach with atomistic simulations. And we are developing this hybrid particle field scheme, which we think will provide a convenient link between particle and field-based simulations models for soft matter in the future. And with that, I'd like to thank the people who did the work.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, paper is open for discussions, questions. Glenn?
In the hybrid model, it seems that you're, for the field, moves, it seems that you're making a mean field.
Yeah, right.
Approximation.
Because we're using this EPD, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of inconsistency in that the particle part of the model obviously has fluctuations and the field part doesn't.
Yeah.
Presumably that's, you know, in melt or blend problems, that probably that approximation doesn't do much. But I'd worry about it in solvated problems. What do you think?
So the idea is actually that we would use the particle model for the in the regions where we have low densities and the field model in the regions where we have high densities. So that was the original motivation for this. I should add that, of course, we could use this same idea to combine this with complex Langevin. We only have run into one problem here. Two problems, actually. The first is that the complex Langevin the mean field is really much faster than the complex Langevin. You know, if we want to reach a substantial speed up, it's better to stick with. I have to go to the very beginning. Come on. Sorry. I guess I want to go. Yeah. Yes. So we found that even with the Fadeev-Popov trick, we can use complex Langevin and it works, but only if these interactions. If these interactions here are quadratic, and if they are not quadratic, for some reason it doesn't work for us. But we may have done it in a suboptimal way.
We've done a little bit of these.
Yeah.
CL simulations of hybrid models with density and auxiliary fields, and it turns out you actually have to rotate the scheme a little bit in the complex plane to get conversion.
But even if you have a rho to the power of 3 and 4 terms here, because anyway we sort of gave up on this, but in principle the idea could of course be used together with complex Langevin. The only thing is that from a point of view of speed up, it's better to use it in combination with mean field approaches. Yeah.
Excuse me. I am very interested in your switching procedure between particle and the fields.
Yeah.
It should not be reversal. So that probably mapping of switching from particle to field is more or less straightforward because it is reducing the degree of freedom. Mm-hmm. But the opposite is not trivial to me. How did you actually do that?
How we took the particle out or how we put the particle in?
So the switching from field to particle, you have to increase the degree of freedom. How did you do that?
Yeah, that's done with this configurational bias Monte Carlo. That's a method how you can put in chains in a well-defined way according to the distribution of fields that you have. And sorry, yeah. I guess it was never an issue. It must be more than a few percent. Yeah, because you know the thing is that we have these soft interactions. Yeah, that helps, of course. Yeah. We don't have to squeeze them in.
Yeah, I'm interested in some things which are non-equilibrium. So if you have a vesicle,
yeah,
and you want to grab part of it and pull on it,
mm-hmm,
can you do something like that with these formulations?
Yes, of course. Yeah, I can apply forces. Yeah, it depends on what exactly you grab. If you grab by in something that has interactions with one of the two components, then yes, no problem. Yeah.
Yeah, I think sort of related to that is if you put, say, nanoparticles inside the vesicle and they react to some field, it could be a magnetic or electric field. I think that would be pretty straightforward, but...
Yeah, I think, it's feasible, yeah.
When you introduce hydrodynamics, you do expect to see some differences in the outcome, especially if you have non-equilibrium structures.
Yeah.
That's what we are seeing. Is that what you are starting to see, or?
Yes, what we see is in this case of vesicles, we saw very small hints. Maybe better once we look into the more realistic chain dynamics. Where we did see something, this was also in agreement with what's found in the literature, is when we also looked at the dynamics of forming copolymer mesophases. And there, without hydrodynamics, in the case of a lamella structure, you often get stuck in the phase with many defects. And then with hydrodynamics, this doesn't happen. But on the other hand, if you look at the copolymers going into cylindrical phases, then you get stuck in phases with defects in both cases. So there, the hydrodynamics doesn't help. Yeah.
One question which always comes to me when these kind of methods are used to look at polymers written in solution, block copolymers with solvent and so on.
Yeah.
If you then have isolated polymers, do you properly reproduce the exude volume exponents, or because of this density description, you just stick to a Gaussian chain?
Well, in these density descriptions, you should properly reproduce the excluded volume chain.
Because you distinguish the densities.
Yes,
so if you would have one polymer in a solution very short, same chemistry systems.
No, let's say if you have one polymer on a grid, right? Mm-hmm. Then the polymer, of course, even if it interacts with its own monomers.
And the rest, yes. And that you have to distinguish from.
Yes, right. So what you don't get is the correlation holes, I guess. These interchain correlations in dense melts that you probably don't get. I don't know, but I would be surprised. But what you do get is if you are you have only a single chain with no other chain in a solvent, then it swells.
Okay.
Because it swells due to the density of its own monomers. Yeah.
We can talk about this later. Still not completely convinced.
Actually, I didn't believe it first when I saw these models, but now I believe it myself.
Okay, are there further questions? Everything seems to be clear or not? Okay, there is lunch now, maybe in 5 minutes, I don't know, officially in 5 minutes, but there should be lunch now. Be sure to wear your badge. As far as I was told, your badge is your lunch ticket. And then please be back at 2 o'clock sharp for the first talk of the afternoon session given by Cameron Abrams, who was standing there, took care of a microphone on the other side of the hall here. And with this, I would like to close the morning session. And again, thank all the speakers of the morning very much for the interesting contributions.
Can I say, I forgot something? Can I say something? I forgot I wanted to advertise a conference that we're having in the summer, September 19 to, can I? September 19 to 21, and it's an honor of Kurt Binder, who's changing his status from a professor who's not retired to a professor who's retired but still doing research. And Kurt Binder in mind. And it's the title of the conference is a statistical mechanics interplay of simulation and theory, and Kurt Krimer is one of the co-organizers, and therefore you can be sure that it's going to be a very exciting conference.